welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 233 of the podcast, and it's 6th of September 2015 as I record this. So this will go out on Labor Day for Americans and Canadians, so happy Labor Day. And I actually like the idea of a holiday celebrating workers, since I definitely love my work, and here I am working. So today I have an interview with the lovely Mark Coker from Smashwords. Now, Mark and I connected first way back in 2009. He was one of the first people I met on Twitter, and self-publishing back then was still considered sort of anathema to the traditional industry, and most authors thought we were sort of the depths of the sort of dirty side of publishing. And I remember the sort of comments I used to get about it. And then I met Mark online, and he was super excited about the potential of going indie. And I met up with him when he came to Australia. And of course, since then, Smashwords has become super successful and is one of the sort of big indie brands. Mark is the CEO and founder of Smashwords. And today we do a kind of state of the indie nation, which was super fun. So that is coming up very soon. Now, today, I'm actually pretty exhausted. You might be able to hear that in my voice. It's also a bit hoarse because it's been a pretty big few weeks. So I finally finished and finished the Creative Freedom course, which is essentially everything that I think you need to know and everything I do to make a living with your writing. And so it's, you know, it's really substantial, and I've rethought a lot of how I communicate, much of the modules and everything. It's been very exciting. I'm very, really, really pleased with it, and very quietly launched the course. I've just been sort of releasing it in the video series. So I'm taking it very slowly because, of course, it's advanced material. I realize that not everybody wants to make a living with their writing. So it is advanced. And so the first students are in and it's going well, but it's definitely been a lot of work. If you want to check it out, you can actually get a free video introductory series that I've mentioned before at thecreativepen.com/freedom. And that starts with 11 ways to make money as an indie author. Or you can actually check out the course at creativefreedomcourse.com. So that's been a really big piece of work, and I'm very happy with that. And I will be blogging about the process in the next sort of month or two once I've settled down again. I'm also doubly tired, as yesterday I actually spoke up in Scotland at a little hotel on Loch Fyne, which was sort of north of Glasgow. Northwest of Glasgow towards the coast and the islands. And I actually did my one day course version of how to make a living with your writing. And it was actually brilliant. I mean, when I'm tired, I do find it difficult to do speaking, but it's so worth it because the 18 authors that I had in the room really were so responsive to the entrepreneurial slant and the empowerment of the creative that I'm passionate about, and basically I'm teaching in this course. You know, it's that we can be artists and we can make a living this way, good living. And I think that some of that is to do with the fact that the people of the West Coast and the Highlands have a very independent spirit, and that there are not that many traditional ways of having a job. So many people do lots of different things creatively and, you know, to earn money, and they absolutely embrace the fact that the author wears different hats, and I just love seeing the change in people's eyes, this kind of dawning realization. Like, I think those of us who've been doing this a while, we forget how amazing it is the first time when the penny drops around some of these things. So, like, when I explained print on demand, you know, one lady actually kind of gasped, like, really? Wow, you can do that? You don't have to print thousands of books and ship them to, you know, warehouses and stuff. So that was awesome. Also, the understanding that they could sell globally was also brilliant, and the how intellectual property rights work. Really, really fun to see people realize what they had as creatives and to be very empowered. And so super rewarding to do that live. And also, it was a beautiful day up in the Highlands of Scotland. So even though we were in the hotel. So I will definitely be continuing the live speaking as well as the online course sales. Of course, I can't be everywhere in the world. So I wanted to do the same course online. The live thing is definitely fun. And tomorrow, and I've been working so hard to get things done on a deadline because tomorrow, Monday, 7th of September, I have had in my diary for ages now that I'm starting what is a working title of Risen Gods, the first scene for my first co-written book with the wonderful Jay Thorne. Jay writes mainly horror, but also dark fantasy. And so we're doing a dark fantasy, almost post-apocalyptic. I guess it's kind of apocalyptic because it's as that kind of happens, a thriller set in New Zealand, where I lived for 7 years. And I've had a story rattling around in my head after the Christchurch earthquake, and it will be sort of New Zealand myths and legends come to life. So it will be super interesting. And it is, well, who knows what will happen, because I've never co-written with anyone and Jay has, so he's better at that than I. But we're using a new world, new characters, and we'll see. It might be a standalone. If it's a standalone, you'll know. I'm going to have Jay on the podcast and we're going to talk about this afterwards. And because we're kind of online friends, we're taking this sort of in a very open way. And if it doesn't work out because I'm such a control freak, then fair enough. But I'll report back over the coming weeks. But I'm really happy to be getting back to, I feel like I've been in Joanna Penn mode for the last sort of 5-6 weeks. And on tomorrow, I'm back as JF Penn. So JF Penn gets to play and make stuff up. And Jay and I are intending to, because we're going to go back and forward. So he's in the East Coast of America and I'm in London. So, and I write in the mornings. So basically I'll start writing about 8 o'clock. And then send over my words by lunch, my lunchtime. And then he will pick that up in his morning and do his words. And then I'll get them back and carry on. So we're going to try and do it that way. So it's going to be really super interesting. We shall see. We're intending to finish the first draft in September, which between the two of us, we should be able to do a, you know, 60,000-70,000 word book in that time and have it out in November. That's the plan. So finish it in September, edit it, and have it out in November, certainly before Christmas. So I'll keep you up to date. In publishing news this week, really amusing. Now, I know Joe Conrath and Barry Eisler sometimes take things a little bit too far with their fisking, but they did a hilarious take on the Wall Street Journal's article this week with the shock news that ebook sales have fallen since the Big Five got their way with agency pricing and put the prices of ebooks back up. So I don't know if you remember all that kerfuffle from earlier in the year. The publishers were like, no, we want to put the price up, and Amazon was like, no, readers don't want to pay more money for Kindle books. And in the end, the Big Five got their way, put the prices back up. And that's why you see on Amazon, this price was set by the publisher. They've done that so that you can see when a book is really expensive that it's not Amazon's fault. So the article's funny because it, you know, this piece in the Wall Street Journal seemed to suggest that it was a shock and also that it's Amazon's fault. So I do actually feel very sorry for debut authors right now. I know a number of debut authors in the UK whose Kindle prices are ridiculous. I mean, some of them are over £10, which to Americans would be about $13, $14. And, you know, to me, for a first-time author ebook, I'm not paying that. You know, even if they're a friend of mine, that's a lot of money. You know, I want to pay $2.99 for a new author's book. I don't want to pay any more than that, to be honest. Even for the authors I love the most now, I bulk at £7.99, pounds, that is, which is around $9.99 US. That's about the price I want to pay for a Lee Child, you know. So anyway, I think we're going through interesting times. But what it does mean is for indies, quite a lot of indies have put their own books up. You know, certainly one of my $4.99 novels looks like really good value. $4.99 or £2.99 looks like great value against some of these others. So that's interesting. So that was interesting in news this week. Also, I have been getting more and more questions about Scrivener as many of us spread the word about how life-changing for writers Scrivener is. Again, in this thing I did yesterday on Lockfine, you know, I said, okay, so formatting ebooks, I use Scrivener. And out of 18, only one person had heard of Scrivener. So I was like, oh, goodness, you know, you guys, you should check it out. But I know a lot of people find it a little bit unwieldy at the beginning. So I am doing another webinar with the wonderful Scrivener coach, Joseph Michael. And these webinars have, we've done it twice before and we've had over 1,100 people register. So we can absolutely, if you register, you also get the recording. So even if you can't attend live, it is going to be on Thursday, 24th of September at 3 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. London, and it will be a 60-minute webinar, 30 minutes Q&A, so an hour and a half altogether. And yes, you get the recording, and there'll be lots of tips on how to effectively use Scrivener. So please do check this out. Come and register at thecreativepen.com/love Scrivener. So thecreativepen.com/love Scrivener, or this will be in the show notes for episode 233. There'll be a link there. Okay, so here's what you've sent me this week. I know it's been a bit of a quiet week. Schools have gone back, and of course, Labor Day weekend and all that. I'm sure everyone will be back into it soon. Nancy says, listening on the bus heading to work in downtown Minneapolis, passed by the new Bob Dylan mural. Sent me a picture of the mural, which is brilliant. Andrew says, thank you for your podcast encouraging mid-year reflections, which I've really enjoyed doing. Thanks for that, Andrew. And of course, now we're actually in almost quarter four, which is scary. It's very scary considering how fast the time flies. Joanna Moore says, heading out for a run with presumably the podcast to get pumped up for a 24-hour get loads done on my podcast-a-thon ahead of my launch. So all the best with your own launch, Joanna. With your podcast. I certainly have found podcasting one of the most rewarding things I've done in my creative career, and you know, I love it. Honoré's back at the gym. You know, every time Honoré now every week is showing up, sending pictures of her at the gym, I'm like, I should be at the gym. So run, Honoré, run. Rhonda Ride says, love this week's podcast with Ricky Wollman. So super helpful. And I've actually had a load of emails and tweets about the interview with Ricky. I also loved it. It really was super. She's so smart. Melissa also said, today's podcast with Ricky was especially good. Thank you. Lisa said, last week's podcast inspired me to add to a post I was writing on work-life balance. Brilliant. And I really love to hear how these interviews and podcasts help you turn things into creations or what you're doing with the information. So thank you for that. Monica Leonel said, I love the interview with the Creative Pen and Honoré about writing and money. Favorite of the year so far. Well, that's good. Yeah, that's super. Actually, you know, really great to hear that when you like specific episodes. Okay, so what are you doing while listening to the show, or has a particular podcast spurred you into action? You can tweet me at The Creative Pen or email me joanna@thecreativepen.com and let me know. So this podcast is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life, and I'll be playing a word from Kobo in a minute. And this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting, but and the transcription, which is super, because there is a transcription on the show every week, if you didn't know, so you can always get your notes there. But my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. Thanks especially to new patrons, Shelley Sperry, which is a lovely name, Shelley, really nice, and Scott A. Coombs. Of course, that's a lovely name too, Scott. Just not quite so much alliteration. And thanks to everyone supporting on Patreon. I really appreciate it, and it makes me feel that people enjoy the show and want it to continue. I'm also dangerously close to reaching my first Patreon milestone, which is quite weird because I never expected to reach that. So if we tip over the milestone, I will be doing Q&A only shows that will only be available to Patreon supporters. So Patreon supporters can ask me questions, and I'll be recording Q&A shows directly to them. So that will be fun. So if you would like to be part of that, come over to Patreon, patreon.com/thecreativepen, and you can support just $1 per show to a maximum of 2 shows a month. So less than a coffee a month. Fun, fun. Okay, thank you. And here's a word from Kobo, and then we'll get into the interview with Mark Coker.
Hey, Creative Pen listeners. Kobo Writing Life wants your advice. We've just launched Author Services, a place within the KWL dashboard where we'll point authors towards trusted resources on everything from cover design to editing to print on demand. We're in phase one of the project, and that's where you come in. You can decide which services we should focus on first. Head to your KWL dashboard and check out the new Author Services tab. Choose which opportunities you're most interested in. Don't see what you want? Select Tell Us More. If you don't have a KWL account yet, uploading to Kobo directly is free and easy. Head to kobo.com/writinglife to sign up. We can't wait to hear from you.
Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Mark Coker. Hi Mark.
Hi Joanna.
Oh, it's so good to have you back on the show after, I think it's been 5 years. So,
it's been a while.
I know, it's crazy. Just a little introduction, just in case anyone doesn't know Mark. Mark is the founder and CEO of Smashwords, and also an author, speaker, and angel investor. And today we're going to do a bit of a state of the indie nation type of thing. But Mark, I wanted to first, you know, we met in person in Australia like 5 years ago, and that seems forever in the publishing landscape, and Smashwords was reasonably new. So I wonder, just give us a sort of update. What's going on with Smashwords? What has changed since 2010?
Well, I think in 2010 we were doing about 5,000 books at Smashwords.
Right.
Maybe 10,000 at that time.
In total.
Yeah, in total. Today we're publishing over 360,000 books, working with over 100,000 authors and small independent presses around the world. So a lot has happened in the last few years.
And do you think that represents the growth of self-publishing in general in the last 5 years?
Yeah, I think that's a good indicator for how quickly self-publishing has grown. There was a lot of pent-up demand, hundreds of thousands of authors around the world eager to get published, who couldn't work with the traditional publishing system. And so we just saw this torrent of books coming onto the market, you know, thanks to platforms like Smashwords and thanks to the ebook retailers opening up their stores to self-published authors.
Mm. And back then, was it just Amazon? I mean, you know, Smashwords obviously has a retail side, but, you know, what did it look like then compared to now?
You know, back then, Amazon was still the largest player in ebooks. You know, in early 2010, Amazon controlled about 90% of the ebook market. That's declined quite a bit, thanks to the success of Apple iBooks, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, and other smaller retailers. So Amazon's market share today for ebooks is probably around 60-65%, where it's been for a couple of years, but down quite a bit from those days where it controlled everything.
Yeah, which is fascinating. And what do you think about the maturity of authors and things like cover design? You know, have you seen a real change in the way that indies are?
Oh, definitely. You know, when indies first came to market, you know, from my perspective, 8 years ago, we launched Smashwords almost 8 years ago. There wasn't really any guidebook for how to self-publish an ebook. And, you know, a lot of the first indies were, you know, just experimenting with different things. When you look at what indies are doing today, indies are just so much more sophisticated, so much more professional, so much smarter about ebook publishing best practices. And we see that in the cover design. We see that in the quality of the work. We see that in the sophistication of the promotion and the marketing.
Mm. And what about the stigma? Because again, when you and I talked, you know, back in 2010, there still really was a issue with being self-published. Has that completely gone, or where is the shift there?
Well, it's not completely gone. So, you know, 7-8 years ago, self-publishing was the option of last resort for authors. It was seen as the option for failed authors. And that was really the reality of the situation, because the authors who were self-publishing then typically were not doing it by choice. They were doing it because they had been rejected by the publishers. And, you know, back when the publishers controlled the publishing industry, if they rejected you, you were a failure. So that's where everything was, you know, 7-8 years ago. But what we've seen is that, you know, many indies, and I have just enormous respect for those very first indies who entered the scene, and you were among the first as well, who really believed in themselves. And it wasn't about vanity. It was about believing in yourself and wanting to have a chance to be judged by your readers. And so a lot of those indies took the leap despite the stigma and achieved commercial success. And with each commercial success for each indie, it helped really educate all other authors that, yes, you can publish with pride, professionalism, and success as an indie author. And so when we look at the state of the stigma today, the stigma has declined markedly. I think that most authors still aspire to traditionally publish, but that number, that percentage is declining every single year. And now it's really easy to find indie authors who are indie by choice and first-time authors who aspire to be an indie author. And then you look at authors in the indie community, they self-identify as an indie author. They wear it as a badge of pride. And so we've seen this amazing reversal. At the same time that the stigma of self-publishing has declined, we've seen the stigma of traditional publishing increase, I think. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're probably just a couple years away from more authors aspiring to indie publish than to traditionally publish.
Amazing. And and I can see that too. I mean, I'm a proud indie, and I know you are. And actually, I wonder, many people might not realize your own story. You know, many people start a company because they think there's money in it, which is a good thing. But you're an author, right? Just tell us about why you started Smashwords way back when it really wasn't trendy to be an indie.
It was all a fantastic mistake. About 14 years ago, I met my future wife, Leslie Ann, and she is a former reporter for Soap Opera Weekly magazine here in the States. Her job was to go to the sets of the Hollywood soap operas and interview the actors and actresses. So when I met her, she was telling me these stories about how the actors and actresses were more crazy in person, in real life, than they were in front of the camera. And if, for anyone who's ever watched an American soap opera, you know that'd be pretty amazing to be more crazy than the storylines there. I suggested that she write a book about her experiences, and she said, well, why don't we write the book together? And I'd always dreamed of writing a book. I just never thought it would be about soap operas. And so I took a sabbatical from my company, and we spent a few years researching and writing this novel, BoobTube. We were fortunate enough to get represented by one of the top literary agencies in New York City, Distel & Goderich. And for 2 years, they tried to sell the novel to all the major publishers of commercial women's fiction, and they couldn't sell it. The feedback that our agent told us he got from the publishers was that previous novels that targeted soap opera fans hadn't performed well in the marketplace. So they were reluctant to take a chance on what was not a hot category. And so, you know, we were left with the option to either give up, like most authors did at that time, this is 10 years ago, or, you know, we had the option to self-publish. In fact, our agent suggested we self-publish, but self-publishing seemed unsatisfying to me. You know, self-publishing in print has been around for over 30 years. But I knew that if we couldn't get our book into bookstores, we weren't going to reach very many readers. And I had no interest in filling up my garage and the trunk of my car with a bunch of unsold novels. And so I thought about, you know, could there be a different way to do this? And I realized that, you know, despite all the talent and best intentions of publishers, they're in the business of selling books, not publishing books. And they need to acquire books that have the greatest commercial potential. So they're judging books through this myopic prism of commercial potential. And I was thinking, you know, books are more valuable than that. And even if my book has a potential commercial market of one reader, if it can satisfy that one reader, it's worth publishing. And I thought, you know, this was, you know, again, 10, 12 years ago when I came up with the idea. Blogging had come on the scene in a really big way, and that was inspirational to me because blogging represented the democratization of writing. and the democratization of publishing. And so I thought, well, maybe there's an opportunity to do what's happening in blogging in book publishing. And then I thought, well, what if I could make it possible for any writer in the world to self-publish a book, to control all the rights, to be able to do it at no cost to the writer, no risk to the writer, and let readers judge the writer. And that was the radical idea, this radical belief that every writer in the world deserves to become a published author if they want. And so that's what we launched in 2008. And it's been an amazing journey ever since. You know, a lot of our authors have gone on to become USA Today bestsellers and New York Times bestsellers. We've got thousands of authors who are supplementing their monthly income with self-publishing. And many, many more writers who don't sell well, but they're still gaining, you know, enormous satisfaction from their self-publishing journey. Because as writers know, there's a joy in writing that can't be measured by your commercial success. There's a joy in total creative control, a joy in publication, a joy in communicating directly with your readers, hearing directly from your readers. And so, you know, this movement, it is a movement. It's a worldwide cultural movement, this indie author movement, and it's here to stay, and it's going to transform publishing for the better.
It's lovely to hear your origin story. And, you know, I think that indie is a movement too, and not just in writing. I mean, look at indie film, indie music. We've got the maker movement. We've got even things like farmers markets, I think, are in the same movement. It's a move away from supermarkets to buying from a farmer, away from a big publisher, buying from a creative. You know, it really is a movement. And more like podcasting, this is not a commercial radio show. You know, but we're still self-published. Publishing audio as such. So I'm really excited too. And we think similarly in many ways. So I did want to just go through some of the big things that are happening right now and get your take. So one of the things that we've seen in the last week or so is Hugh Howey and Joe Comrath, some of the big names in indie, coming out and going, yay, KDP Select 2.0 is amazing. Look at all the money we're making. And I'm multi-platform focused, as of course you are, because you're smash words, but I am, because we've seen this before, right? KDP 1.0, everyone was like, yay, look at all the money, and then KU apocalypse. So what are your thoughts, assuming that you and I are both biased, what are your thoughts on the KDP 2.0, and, you know, what should authors be looking out for?
Well, you know, I am biased. You know, a big mission here at Smashwords is to promote a thriving and diverse ecosystem of multiple retailers, multiple buy-in options, multiple selling options for authors. And so, you know, specifically, you know, for folks who aren't don't understand the distinctions at Amazon, you know, I think Amazon is the smartest player in the business. Every author should have their book at Amazon through the KDP platform. But there are two options in KDP. There's the regular KDP, which every author should participate in, and then there's KDP Select, which requires exclusivity. I've written about this quite a bit since they first launched KDP Select. I think KDP Select is toxic to the future of publishing. I think every book that goes into KDP Select is a vote to put all the other retailers out of business. And I know authors aren't thinking this way. You know, authors are rightly seen an opportunity to sell more books at Amazon. Authors who put their books in KDP Select will sell more books at Amazon. The system is designed that way. And authors who don't go exclusive to Amazon will be punished by Amazon. Amazon provides discovery advantage to books that are exclusive to them or that are published by them. They've created a caste system. Now, if we step back and we look at what's really happening in the world of publishing, this is a no-growth market. In the aggregate, the business of book publishing is not growing. If it's growing, it's growing very slowly. It's been flat for at least 10 years. And certainly a lot of indies have seen that the rapid exponential growth of the first few years is now a distant memory. The market for ebooks has pretty much gone flat. And so we have a problem here. We have more high-quality, low-cost books there's a glut of high quality, low cost books, more books than readers will ever possibly be able to read. And so with KDP Select, Amazon gets to decide which books are read. So they're giving narrow focus to books that are exclusive. Those books will do well in KDP Select. But authors who put their books in KDP Select are guaranteeing their inability to build a diverse network for their authors, a diverse revenue stream for their authors. You know, when you look at the impact that that Kindle Unlimited had on the market for authors at Amazon, when it was introduced, I guess, almost a year and a half ago, a lot of authors saw their sales drop 50% or more instantly. And that's because Amazon provides a merchandising advantage to the books that are in Kindle Unlimited. Mm. The books in Kindle Unlimited are lower cost to Amazon. They encourage their customers to get the books for free through Kindle Unlimited, through a Kindle Unlimited subscription, than buying standalone copies. Mm. So that it's good for the books that are in that program. But it's not good for authors who are trying to earn a living selling standalone copies. And it's not good for authors who recognize that what Kindle Unlimited really represents. It represents Amazon stripping authors of pricing control. Because in Kindle Unlimited, the price of your book doesn't matter at all. Mm. You know, Amazon decides what your book is worth to you, you know, what you deserve to be paid. So, you know, at first, when Amazon first launched Kindle, author based on readers reaching a certain threshold, 10%, and then it would trigger a full sale. So authors of shorter works had a benefit there. Authors of longer works were disadvantaged. Now they changed it to favor authors of longer works. They're paying by the page. Mm. So it disadvantages authors of shorter works, you know, so erotica authors, children's book authors, a lot of nonfiction authors are going to be disadvantaged under that system. And authors have no control over it. So Amazon decides what you're going to be paid, and nothing stops them from changing the rules again.
Yeah, and if they follow the same pattern, then it's likely it starts really good and everyone's happy. And I know a lot of authors who have once again pulled all their books off every other vendor and gone back into Select. And we'll see what happens by Christmas, I guess. But I know many people listening will just have gone into Select, and we're not like having a go at authors. That's not what we're doing. But I agree with you. And I think I hate trusting my entire income to one company. Like, that's my fundamental belief, is that you should never allow one company control over your entire income. I was laid off in 2008, along with a lot of other people in the global financial crisis, and I swore that I would never let that happen again. So that's the reason I know that I won't ever just be exclusive. But I did want to disagree with you on something. You said that the sales were flat. Now, I agree that they might be flat. Digital sales, ebook sales might be flat in the US, the UK, maybe Canada. But what I'm thinking about the next move is global. And, mm-hmm. you know, every month I'm seeing sales in more and more countries. You know, I have sold in 68 countries in English through Kobo, through iBook. And so I'm seeing that the next growth is actually everywhere else in the world. And I know you've just published the formatting guide in Portuguese, so presumably mm-hmm. betting on Brazil. But what do you see for the next fundamental kind of growth spurt in digital on a global scale?
Well, I think I actually agree with you. There is tremendous opportunity on the global front. You know, for the last 2 years, 45% of our sales through iBooks have been outside the United States. Mm. And we are selling books into, you know, every one of their 51 countries every single day. And these are largely English language books. Yeah. So there's a lot of reason to be optimistic about the global opportunity. And a lot of this global opportunity is going to be based on the mobile opportunity. You know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, the vast majority of entry-level mobile phones were not ebook ready. But today, the vast majority of phones are smartphones. And so all of these phones are, essentially bookstores in the pockets of readers. iBooks, Apple bundles their ebook store right on the home screen now of over 1 billion customers, 1 billion devices. I think about the opportunity in developing countries where, people get mobile phones before they get running water and electricity, and they now have access to books that just never would have been available to them before. So yes, there's an opportunity globally. It's exciting. But I think most of the opportunity is still in the main English language countries for English language authors. So the US, Australia, UK, and Canada. And in these markets, the markets are relatively mature. Mm-hmm. And, even though the market has gone flat, I think, in the aggregate, there's still tremendous opportunity for every author to break out and to do really well. It's just that there's more competition than ever before. And that's okay. It's really interesting when you think about it. Back in the dark ages of print publishing, publishers controlled the printing press. They decided which books were published. They decided which books went out of print. And most books went out of print very quickly. So there was a limited supply of books. And so now we're living in this age of abundance where ebooks are immortal. They never go out of print. They will forever occupy bookshelves, the virtual bookshelves, which means every single week you face more competition for your books. And that's both good and bad. It means that every author has a chance, but it means there's more competition. It means that to stand out, you really need to implement all of the best practices, and you need to be patient, and you need to work hard, and keep your expectations realistic, that this is a long-term journey. I see so many authors who try publishing and give up after 6 months because they didn't sell well. It's really important for indies to understand that most indies don't sell well. And that's just the truth of the matter. We've always been upfront about that.
Yeah, and you can, like you said, I think what you said at the beginning around creativity and writing being the end, as it doesn't have to just be money, and I think that is really important. However, people listening are going, okay, you mentioned that authors can still break out, and you mentioned some best practices. Now, Smashwords has a number of free books that you've written around best practices, but maybe you could give us a couple of things that really do, that you've noticed that the breakout authors have done.
Well, really the most important thing is the book. I see a lot of authors putting attention into things that aren't really going to give them the biggest bang for the buck. And 6 years ago, you could write a mediocre book, price it at 99 cents, and you were going to reach a lot of readers because readers hadn't seen 99-cent books before. But today, I just blogged about it yesterday. A few weeks ago, I heard from an author who had priced all his books at free and he wasn't reaching readers. So even free isn't enough to reach readers. It's all about the book. Good is not good enough anymore. Your book needs to take the reader to an emotionally satisfying extreme. The book needs to make the reader go, wow. You need to blow their mind, because that's how you turn a reader into a super fan. That's how you turn a reader into an evangelist. That's how you trigger word of mouth. That's how one reader becomes two readers. So that's really the most important thing. You need to aim to, you need to write a 5-star book. If you look at the bestsellers, they're getting 5-star reviews, 4.5, 5-star reviews. If you're earning 3.5 stars, it's not good enough. You're not going to break out in a big way. So book quality, most important thing. I'm a big believer in broad distribution. Broad, uninterrupted distribution. So, authors who followed my advice 5 years ago and maintained broad distribution everywhere are much more likely to be earning more outside of Amazon than at Amazon. So they are insulated with that diversification. If Amazon changes the algorithms again, these people aren't out of work. They're not destroyed. Their business of publishing is not destroyed. The cover image, you've talked about this a lot in the past. A cover image is just really important. So 7-8 years ago, most indies were creating their own cover images, and those images looked amateur. Today, I think most indies are using a professional to design their cover, but there are still indies who are not using professionals to design their own covers, so they will be disadvantaged. Mm. There are new best practices, like pre-orders. I mean, we've found very strong evidence that books that are born as a pre-order sell more copies than books that are just simply uploaded the day of release. Yet when we look at the books published at Smashwords in the last 12 months, over 90% of the books were just uploaded day of release. Less than 10% were uploaded as a pre-order, even though pre-orders account for 2/3 of our top 100 bestsellers. So authors who are doing pre-orders today are getting a huge advantage. And, you know, I think the problem right now is a lot of authors don't know how to take full advantage of pre-orders. But, you know, I'd refer them to Smashwords. I've written a bunch of blog posts on how to take the most advantage of pre-orders. So it's a great tool. Every author should be looking at their publishing schedule for the next 12 months and get everything up on pre-order today. So that's a great tip. You know, and then I would just say, you know, there are really dozens of best practices that authors need to be following. It's not about, you know, that single magic bullet. There is no single magic bullet. You know, KDP Select is not the single magic bullet. It's a temporary win for you, but it's not the long-term win. Mm-hmm. You know, even in KDP Select, if you want to be most successful, you want to take advantage of, you know, the dozens of other best practices. It's all about doing dozens of things right and avoiding those critical mistakes that will undermine you for the long term.
Mm. I want to come back on pre-orders, because I jumped in on pre-orders, and I know obviously iBooks allows assetless pre-orders. You can literally just put up a title, right? You don't even need a cover. You can even change the title later. I mean, you literally can just say, I could just say Arcane Book 9 and that's all, and for a whole year. And also on Kobo, I believe it's a year as well. But for what we've seen, the word on the street is on Amazon, there's almost no point in doing pre-orders, because it splits your ranking over a long period, whereas iBooks you get double ranking. You get ranking when on the pre-orders, and then on go live date you get another ranking and a nice spike. So I mean, I'm almost thinking it's good to do pre-orders on Kobo and iBooks but not on Amazon. What do you think about that?
I know a lot of Smashwords authors are deliberately not doing a pre-order at Amazon just for that reason, for fear that during that time that their book is available as pre-order, they're actually cannibalizing their first day's sales rank.
Yeah.
And the truth of the matter is, yes, you are cannibalizing your first day's sales rank, because all of those accumulated pre-orders don't credit toward the first day's sales at Amazon. But, you know, although I could say, yes, you know, no author should do a pre-order at Amazon, it's not that simple, because, you know, that boost in the sales rank that you get at iBooks and at Kobo, and to some extent at Barnes & Noble as well, that's not the only benefit of pre-orders. So one of the most important benefits of a pre-order is that pre-orders enable more effective advanced marketing. So, you know, a lot of authors are working on their books and communicating with their fans on Facebook or on social media, saying, hey, you know, this is the book I'm working on next. It's coming out in 6 months, 9 months. You're getting readers excited. You're building demand for your book. But if you don't have a pre-order, you have no way to capture that order at the moment you have the reader's attention and interest. And so I think this, you know, that benefit is still a huge benefit at Amazon. You know, pre-orders are exciting to readers. You know, pre-orders allow you to, allows the reader to imagine this wonderful book that you're going to come out with. A pre-order communicates to your reader that you're making a commitment. Like, I think a series with follow-on pre-orders is more desirable than a series without the follow-on pre-orders, because you're making a commitment to the reader that you're committed to the series and you've got more books coming. You know, we know that pre-orders sell more copies. You know, even though you give up that accumulated sales rank on day one at Amazon, you can still rank if you're, you know, during that pre-order period based on the number of orders that you're getting. And you're helping to ensure that the first readers to get your books are the first readers to review. And the people who place a pre-order are most likely to be one of your fans already. They already trust you. And so the first round of reviews that you get will be from your most ardent fans. So there are a lot of benefits of doing the pre-order beyond that sales rank jump.
Mm. Just wrote down an idea about a pre-order. So thank you for that. It's always good to think about it in a different way.
Every author is going to need to make the decision for themselves. Like if you don't have a built-up platform already, then, you know, the pre-order may not help you very much at Amazon. If you don't have the ability to do effective advanced marketing, then it may not help you as much.
Hmm. Yeah, there are always pros and cons. I do want to ask you, you mentioned Barnes & Noble there and Nook. I've been very upset with Nook because obviously, I stopped using Nook Press because it just wasn't working and it was breaking, which if people don't know is their own self-publishing platform. And then they cancelled all of their international Nook stores except for the UK. So there's only the US and the UK now. And I believe they've said that they're not going to do any more Nook devices. I think that, don't quote me on that, everybody. But what do you think is happening with Nook?
Well, you know, people have been proclaiming the death of Barnes & Noble ever since I started Smashwords. And yet it has consistently been our second largest sales channel, you know, from the moment we started distributing to them. Every author should be at Barnes & Noble. You should get your books back in Barnes & Noble.
Oh, no, they are. My books are in Barnes & Noble.
Okay, good.
But
all right,
it's
good.
Just like, you know, they're just a pain. And when they cancelled all the international stores after talking to me here about international sales, I was like, what is going on there? Is, you know, by pulling back, aren't they demonstrating, you know, something bad?
Well, you know, they are struggling. You know, and anyone who's competing against Amazon is struggling right now. And, you know, Barnes & Noble has, you know, given themselves some self-inflicted wounds. So, it was disappointing that they pulled back on their international aspirations. But my sense is that they're still committed to ebooks. And, you know, I think we all need to be hoping and rooting that they succeed. It would be a big loss if we lost them.
Yeah, no, agreed.
It would be a big loss to the community if we lost them. I've heard about the struggles with Nook Press. You know, most of our authors use Smashwords to deliver to Barnes & Noble. It's really much easier. Mm. There's an idea out there among some authors that you should go direct everywhere you can, but I don't believe that. And it's difficult for me to separate my self-interest, you know, in this argument.
Of course.
But of course. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you know, it doesn't really matter what happens to me, or it doesn't matter what happens to Smashwords. I really do care about what's in the best interest of authors and the author community. Your unique contribution to the world as an author is your writing. And yes, you can upload directly to a lot of different platforms. And yes, it's relatively easy. It's not difficult. But it is time consuming to manage multiple platforms, especially once you've got multiple books. Hmm. You know, if you want to update the back matter of 10 books at 4 or 5 different platforms, you're talking about hours of work. Hmm. But if you've consolidated your distribution with a distributor, you're talking about a few minutes of work. And that's more time that you can spend writing, more time you can spend, you know, fighting for that work-life balance, spending time with your friends and family. You know, I don't know a single author, you know, who has too many hours in the day.
or many people.
right, or many people. And, it's really, in my mind, it's kind of a no-brainer. You give up a little bit in royalty, but not much. You know, the difference between uploading to Barnes & Noble and Smashwords, you're only giving up 5% of the list price. And at price points under $2.99 or over $9.99, you actually earn about 50% more with Smashwords. So, I think it's dangerous, this idea that you need to upload direct everywhere you can. I know what the average author earns. I see it. And the average author does not earn very much. The average author, you know, is wasting a lot of time that they could be better spent writing. And even among bestsellers, you know, you could argue that a bestseller's time is even more valuable, and it's more important for that bestseller to be focused on the next book rather than managing multiple platforms. And I see authors who achieve success and they end up hiring, you know, teams, assistants to manage all the uploading. And, you know, that's really, I mean, it's great if you can afford to hire a team, but it's really not necessary if you simplify your life and manage your time properly.
So just going back to what's happening with the platforms, another change we've seen recently is iBooks having the audiobooks on the same screen, which I'm like, brilliant. I've been waiting for that. It's ridiculous that the audiobooks have been separated from the iBooks and now they're integrated. So what do you see with audiobooks, and you know, is that exciting? Is Smashwords interested in that arena? And do you see that iBooks will be a bigger challenger to Amazon in terms of the Audible play, for example?
Well, Amazon has monopolistic control over the audiobook market. There really isn't any other player that matters. And we've seen what happens when Amazon gets control over a market, how they just absolutely gutted royalty rates for audiobook authors. And they've locked up a lot of distribution channels exclusively. So there's not, it would be difficult for a challenger to come along and offer an alternative. We have had many Smashwords authors come to us and actually beg us to get into audiobooks and offer an alternative. I mean, the authors are just so upset that Amazon gets to determine what the price of their book is, gets to determine what they pay them. And you know, authors spending thousands of dollars to produce these books and then having all that control taken away from them. You know, I just heard a story, an author emailed me a couple of weeks ago. She said that her narrator for her audiobook, you know, she had originally, the narrator did the first books in her series, you know,
royalty
by
split.
Taking a cut, a royalty split.
Yeah.
Well, now the narrator said, I'm not going to take a royalty split anymore because of, you know, what Amazon's done to the royalties.
I'm hearing that too.
You're going to need to pay me up front. And so, I think there's an opportunity with audiobooks. You know, it's something that we kind of have in the back of our minds. You know, we see how we could disrupt that space potentially. Who knows? We'll see what happens in the future. I still feel like there's a greater opportunity for us to continue building on what we've built on the ebook space. But never say never.
Never say never. Yeah, and I think if anyone's going to challenge Audible, it has to be iTunes. I mean, it has to be. It's the only other kind of big audio platform right now. The only other one being Google Play. Now, we know that there's massive problems with the Google Play ebook arena, which is why most authors don't even do it because of their discounting issues. Do you see any change coming with Google Play? Because they would seem to be an obvious challenger to Amazon.
Well, they are an obvious challenger to Amazon. You know, both they and Apple, you know, those are the two companies that can afford to make no money on books and still stay in business. Those are the only two companies. You know, I've been in communication with Google since the very beginning, have many, many productive discussions with them. They are just an entirely different beast. They feel very strongly that that agency pricing, you know, authors setting their own pricing is bad. They don't see, I don't see them ever abandoning the wholesale model. And their approach to the ebook market is just completely different and, you know, mind-boggling to a lot of us. You know, it's like they've really got their hands tied in their ability to engage with authors and publishers.
So you're not seeing that as something immediate that's going to get fixed, because of course they've closed their publishing stuff now, but I don't know why, you know, problems with piracy and whatever. and I've kind of given up on that for now. But I was thinking it would only be a month or so and then it might be back. But from what you're saying, maybe not.
Well, I think it will be back. But you never know. You know, Google is a really big company, and it remains to be seen if they stay committed to books or not. Mm. I think they really felt burned by the response of the publishing industry when Google was doing all the book scanning.
Yeah, the scanning, yeah.
And, you know, it created a lot of legal troubles for them. And, in the grand scheme of things, I don't know if it's, if long term they're going to see it as a viable opportunity. For now, they do. For now, they appear very committed to it. I hope they stay committed to it. I hope they get the formula right. I hope they figure out a way to accommodate authors, accommodate distributors like Smashwords. I know we've got tens of thousands of authors who are dying to have their books available on Google Play. Mm-hmm. It would be good for Google. It would be good for our authors. It would be good for ensuring a dynamic, competitive ecosystem of multiple retail options for authors. But it's obviously been frustrating as well that frustrating for you and frustrating for every indie author. Mm-hmm. Indie authors want control over their work. Indie authors want to be able to price their own work, as they should. It is the indie author's right to decide what their book should be sold at, in my opinion. But Google sees it a little bit differently right now.
Mm. And then I had a bit of an idea about, I had a lady on last week's show, Ricky from Free Booksy, who is awesome. And we were talking about Facebook. And I was like, with Mark Zuckerberg, with his year of books, we've got internet.org, which is what Facebook is bringing the internet to the world. They're also going to do a cheap phone for all those global markets where Facebook is the browser. They've also added the notes function back in, so native blogging. Do you see Facebook going into native publishing?
They could if they wanted, and that would be very disruptive if they did.
That's what I think too. And often with his year of whatever, Zuckerberg has shown his commitment to books. I think in the books he's choosing are just kind of crazy heavy books. That's kind of my interesting pick out of nowhere for 2016.
Yeah, I think that's a fun prediction. I would like to see them do something in books. I think it would be really interesting. Mark Zuckerberg is a fan of books, as many business leaders are. Books are amazing for anyone who's got a brain. Whether you enjoy fiction or nonfiction, people with brains love books, and he's a smart guy. So it is certainly a tremendous opportunity for him to spread the joy of literature and reading to, billions of people.
Yeah, that is, I think that's going to be very interesting. So I want you to tell everybody a bit more about what they can find at Smashwords if people are not on Smashwords. Why would an author, obviously you've talked about the ease of uploading to multiple platforms at the same time. What are the other reasons people might choose Smashwords, and why would they choose it over Draft to Digital, for example?
Well, Smashwords is the world's largest distributor of self-published books. We've been doing it for almost 8 years now. We've built a really slick platform that makes it fast, free, and easy to self-publish an ebook, to control that book, and to get that book distributed to multiple stores, including stores that you can't reach on your own, that you can't upload direct to. We've invested a lot of effort into building exciting tools that help make your book more available, more discoverable, more desirable to readers. The pre-order tool, the assetless pre-order tool that we announced a couple months ago, huge development effort. tools for enhanced metadata. So we've got a tool called Series Manager that makes book series, all the books in a series, more discoverable at the retailers. So that's a really powerful tool. We distribute to public libraries. We work with Overdrive, Baker & Taylor, Access 360. So we're giving you access to over 20,000 public libraries around the world. And we'll be announcing another library partner here in the next couple months. So we also operate our own store, which is a little bit unusual for a distributor. We started as a store and then entered distribution in 2009. we sell quite a few books at our store. So even if you have no interest in reaching our retailers, you should have your book at Smashwords. There's no cost. It's easy. You can upload a Word doc. You can upload an EPUB and sell in our store. Our store offers the highest royalty rates of any of the stores. You can earn up to 80% list. So why not? You know, it'll help you reach readers that you're not going to reach anywhere else. But, you know, whether an author works with us or not, I hope they take advantage of our best practices materials. You know, all three of the books that I've written are available for free. They've been downloaded over 700,000 times. And, you know, I want people to take my advice, take my guidance, and use it, even if you don't use it at Smashwords, because you know, a rising tide is going to lift all boats. I want to see, you know, every author in the world achieve their greatest aspirations. Mm-hmm. And it really all comes down to best practices. There's nothing more important than best practices.
So just tell people the titles of those books that sure. you have available for free, right, on Smashwords.
Right, everything's free. So three books that you should take a look at. There's the Smashwords Style Guide, so that's how to format and publish any book. The Secrets to eBook Publishing Success. This book identifies about 31 best practices of the best-selling indie authors. So these are their secrets, all of the secrets.
Book.
Well, thank you. You know, inspired by your fellow indie authors. Indie authors are pioneering the secrets to success, and so they're all in that book. And then the Smashwords Book Marketing Guide provides about 40 ideas for marketing your book, your ebook, your print book, and all of these ideas are free to implement, and some of them only take a few minutes to implement, and you'll get long-term benefit. So, yeah, those are the three books. You can check them out. And then, you know, at the Smashwords blog, I'll often blog about, you know, new stuff that's not even in my books yet. And, you know, stuff that I'm talking about in the talks that I do around the country, you know, based on what I'm observing of what's working, what's not.
Yeah, and they're fantastic. And you do great slide shares as well. And yeah, your blog is, I'm always tweeting your blog posts because they're...
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
They're great.
Joanna, you've been such an awesome supporter of the indie author movement. And I appreciate everything you do to help educate authors to become professional publishers. So thank you.
Well, what's so great is we're going to know each other for a long time, I hope, Mark. And
I hope so.
Yeah. And we're just seeing so much change. Obviously, hopefully people will know where to find you, but just in case, where can people find you online?
Well, you can email me mc@smashwords.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Mark Coker. I'm on Facebook. Just search for me at Facebook. And then I'm at Smashwords, of course. You can sign up for an account at Smashwords at smashwords.com. It's very simple. Check out my blog.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for your time, Mark. That was great.
Thanks, Joanna.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free Author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.